and welcome to Small Biz Matters here at the studios of Triple H 100.1 FM in the northern suburbs of Sydney. Thanks so much for joining me for another week of great conversation all about people, policy and purpose. So today's program is all about big tech companies and the way in which they influence policy and have an impact on policy and your business as you run it. Increasingly, they're playing a role of advocate on behalf of their small business users. Some even have branches dedicated to governance and ensuring the data is aggregated, safe to share and presented so that policy readers can read it as a reflection of what matters most to their small businesses. There are some tech companies who use this for their data for the power of good. They use it to support advocacy efforts that shape policies to ensure the views of their small business customers are well presented and both directly to the government and through organisations like COSBOA and industry associations. However, some tech companies only use the data to further their corporate bottom line. Unfortunately, this is a practice that happens worldwide. So how do our policymakers, the decision makers in government, really tell the difference? Should big tech and its data be the advocate for small businesses, especially when the sector cannot produce the data themselves? And where do the big four consulting firms fit into this picture? Today we welcome Emma Clark. She's the Chief Financial and Operations Officer for Mabel, and she joins us to discuss how Mabel supports their small business owners in the care and support sector. We'll also explore how Mabel uses data to ensure that its business decisions and its advocacy efforts align with its platform users' needs, wants and preferences. Join us after this. Welcome to Small Biz Matters, a show where we are dedicated to empowering small businesses and advisors to engage with policy and advocacy. Why? Because what government does very much matters to all small biz, good and bad. Sponsored by the Australian Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman's Office, each week we sit down with experts, advocates, business leaders, policymakers and politicians to dive into specific areas of government policy that affects your clients and your business. We'll give you the heads up on what's coming down the policy pipeline, find out who's fighting in your corner, and empower you with ways you can influence those decisions which affect your business every single day. We proudly broadcast live on our local community radio station, Triple H 100.1 FM, the Community Broadcasting Network, and later wherever you get your favourite podcasts. Let's hear from this week's expert on Small Biz Matters. People, policy, purpose. And you're live in the studios of Triple H 100.1 FM. Thanks once again for joining us. Now, Emma, thank you so much for coming into the studio. It's always wonderful to have a guest live on air, particularly someone who represents our corporate community and how they support small business. Firstly, tell me a little bit about Mabel and how you work with your small businesses to help them get started, help them figure out compliance and work within the care sector.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me on today. Look, I think, you know, Mabel's been around for 10 years now and really it started, co-founded, Australian tech startup, two co-founders, Peter Scutt and Tony Chirara, and really came into being originally in an aged care setting where Peter's mother had some needs and was having people come to her house to help her with those needs. And it was causing a lot of disruption in the household because what was happening was there was different people coming into the house every week. And Peter sat down and thought, there has to be a better way to do this. It has to be something a little bit more flexible, you know, potentially tech-enabled that can make everything so much easier for his parents. And so he basically started Mabel. And what that really did, and to the small business community, it enabled people who wanted to set up their own small business, wanted to be in the care economy but provide care and support on their terms, allowed his mum to pick who was actually going to come into the house and provide that care, and allowed them to really form that direct relationship, which then meant it was the same person every week and they could form a really strong bond. And so it started in aged care and then obviously grew over the 10 years, and with the NDIS really promoting people, allowing them to have that choice and control, obviously that was something that resonated with that group of clients as well. And so the business has sort of grown from there. And at the moment now we have 17,000 support providers, all each running their own small business, all providing care and support on the platform.
And importantly, they're running their small businesses the way that they want to. And this is where I think tech just creates such a great solution for small business. It enables them to figure out how to do things, you give everyone tips and stuff on how to do the compliance thing and how to get an ABN.
Yeah.
But importantly, how to grow or how to get extra training if they need it, where to go. But it's like a, is it like a dating service for people? for people wanting the service and then people who are connecting with them?
Look, you'd be surprised how often people do say, hey, it's like dating. And I suppose there are like those qualitative elements to it, because if you're having someone come into your house, sure, it's about the skills and the experience that the person has that's coming in, the small business person that's coming in. But it's also about like, hey, I like cats. Do you like cats? Are you happy to sit and talk about cats for a while, kind of thing? And so there are those elements. And certainly, you know, our observation would be that when people decide to go into business for themselves, it's because they're really passionate about the product or the service that they're looking to actually engage in. I don't really think I've ever had anyone say to me, hey, I'm super passionate about the compliance and the paperwork. And some of them even like the finding of the clients, the finding of the customers, like that can be really hard if you've got a certain set of skills and expertise, but they're more about delivering care to someone than maybe going and growing your business. And so this is where I think tech platforms can really help, right? Because you can basically it's probably not fair to say not have to worry, but it takes a lot of the heavy lifting off you in the sense of being able to do all those more compliancy and administrative things that I don't think are where people's passion normally reside.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because as you were talking, my brain went to a small business owner wears many hats.
Mm.
But what's funny is we're not hearing that a lot. Like, we're not decreasing the number of times I'm hearing people say, oh, I wear so many hats. And maybe that's because tech is absolving a lot of those, sort of absorbing a lot of those processes that would normally form part of running a business, and they're making it a little bit more automated and making that a bit easier. Is that one of the things that a platform like Mabel does, is it removes the time that it takes to do those things?
Yeah, I mean, as you would no doubt know with all the people that you talk to, you know, starting and running your own business can be very, very daunting, particularly when you haven't done it before. And there is lots of bureaucracy, paperwork, admin. And particularly if I look at the sector in which Mabel operates, you know, we're talking about vulnerable clients who have, you know, some of whom have quite complex needs. And so even simple things like, let's say I'm a support provider, I'm coming into your house to provide care. How do I capture the record of what actually occurred in that environment? And if I'm supporting an older Australian, how do I make sure that I'm, you know, if there was an incident, you know, let's say that person, you know, had a small trip, how does that get captured? How does that get reported? How do we make sure that the well-being of that person is at the centre? And I think for any small business person trying to basically create yourself a set of systems and platforms that can do all that for you is very expensive,
mm-hmm.
and is a skill set that most people don't have. And so this is where platforms can really come to the fore, because basically, you know, we can build that for thousands of people and then they don't have to build it for themselves.
Yeah, that's right. And it's a lot easier to do it where you've got a system which can be workable for many different people under different circumstances. And I suppose that's where one of the ways that data plays a role is that you're constantly analysing and seeing where your workers and your small businesses are working within the sector, and what needs they're meeting. And is that sort of one of the analytics that you're looking at?
Yeah, so look, I mean, a platform like Mabel, and it's true of most platforms, has access to a large amount of data. For Mabel, it's really about making sure that both the client outcomes are being achieved. It's a very personal service in a lot of cases that's being provided, that's helping that person live their best life and stay in their home. And so that's at the centre of what we try to make sure that is being carried out. And then on the support provider side, you know, with 17,000 support providers, you get a lot of information about how people like to work, where they like to work, what they like to do. And so to your earlier point around training and education and what is it that we can do to help people grow their skills and experience, we now have 10 years and a lot of data that can help us not just help those support providers, you know, increase how many clients they're helping out and working with, but also like where they might be able to engage in further skills development and training that then can open them up to more opportunities.
So in a particular area, I know that there's a great need for NDIS support workers and care workers, particularly in regional areas. Is one of the functions of a platform like Mabel to see where the needs are from a perspective of the community as a whole? Is that something that you can have an influence over?
Yes, massively. I mean, obviously most of us reside in metropolitan areas and sometimes therefore the rural communities maybe not at the centre.
But there's need everywhere.
There's
right?
need everywhere. Mm. And if you think particularly about older Australians, how many people go and do a tree change or a sea change? They go, they move somewhere regional, and then they want to stay in their home for as long as they possibly can. And so the need for people working in the care and support economy in those areas is even more overwhelming than in the metropolitan areas. At the moment, on Mabel, about 24% of all of the care that goes on is happening in rural and regional areas.
Is that reflective of the population or the ageing population?
No, actually not. I mean, obviously, if you did a demographic split of the population, it would be far more concentrated in the cities. We would be disproportionately more active in rural and regional areas than the population would suggest. And I think, you know, we operate down to, even for us with a platform, there's obviously large regional areas, and then there's small remote areas. Like, think of a small town that's, you know, 100 or 200 kilometres away from a rural, a major regional rural centre. And you think about people in that community needing support and care. A lot of the funding that they receive actually gets chewed up in travel fees, in people coming from those, you know, larger regional areas to come and provide them support in their community. So one of the things that's really important for tech platforms to unlock is the ability for people to actually provide services in the town that they live in. Mm. And so digital platforms can do that, whereas if you have to have a physical presence as a larger business, like, obviously that becomes uneconomic.
So you've got that ability to recognise where the need is. Mm. Is that another sort of way that you work with demographic indicators, is to see this is where we can see an increase in the population, therefore there is a need? Is it one of the functions to push people into a certain, not to push people in a certain area, that's the wrong word, but just to encourage people and say this is where the need is and this is where the jobs might be?
Yeah, so the way that our platform works, and once again, similar to most platforms, is we basically have clients come on, they'll post a need, and then we'll have the platform, you know, matching algorithms that then say, here's all these support providers, here's what they say they want to do, where they say they want to work, and we try and match effectively the two. We also have some human elements to matching, where if we can see, particularly in those small communities, we'll actually have a person reach out and see if they can actually make that match as well. So the short answer is yes, and we will look at it right down to the actual town. We can actually see, like, I can tell you right now, for example, in Mackay, we have an enormous amount of people who need support and not enough support providers in that particular area, so we can get quite granular.
So would you work with, say, a local council or have that relationship with them to say, this is the data that we have? We know that you've got ABS data, there's population data, there's work and jobs data and skills, etc., but this is some additional stuff that we've produced, and in this way that we can give you some more insights into what's needed in the care sector.
Absolutely. We actually have a program we started a couple of years ago called Community Led that does exactly that. So we have a couple of people who work for Mabel who go into small communities where they can see needs being posted where there are no support providers, and then they'll either partner with a local government organisation or in some cases even private individuals to basically find, like, use a community centre to connect support workers, try and gather support workers in that town who might want to do a few hours a week, you know, helping people with the client need that they know is already there. It usually relies on, to your point, like a local government office or someone in the community who knows everyone in the community and can really draw them together. But yes, we've currently, the numbers move weekly, but I think we're up to 51 communities that we've done that in, and they're all quite small.
Mm, and that's really great to see that that engagement is happening at a government level as well, and that you're seeking, recognising that it's not your role to necessarily have an instant relationship with that community, that it's about building on those grassroots. And I think that's where the success of big tech, because when I say big tech, I mean I'm thinking a national organisation. You've got a lot of clients in lots of different areas, but somehow you manage to have that grassroots connection, and that's really critical. Is that an important part of the tech sector as it grows, and to keep that personal linkage with communities, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's interesting because you said the word big tech, and I almost, even I, you know, working for Mabel, almost have like a bit of an allergic reaction to that, because I'm like, yes, we use technology, but we're using technology to facilitate real outcomes for people. So the technology is just the means, it's not the end. Mm. And so for us, you know, we're always going to keep a really human element to it, and still not try and get ourselves so distant from the community that we serve that it all becomes, you know, just numbers. And so I think it's that balance and I think it comes back to your opening, using technology for good. Because it's, at the end of the day, it's just a tool, can be used for many ways.
And would that be something that you suggest to other startups, that it's a good idea to have in your workflow and in your dreams and ambitions, to make sure that you keep that connectivity with the community in some way, either by meeting a need that is intrinsic to them or keeping that engagement flowing?
100%. I think where you know, the best outcomes get delivered for everyone. It's where you've got that wonderful combination of technology and people. Mm. It shouldn't just be technology.
Yeah, we're seeing a real shift backwards, aren't we? Back away from the well, I guess when we all went through COVID and we had that situation where we didn't have that connectivity and everything was just a floating head on a screen, people are hungry for that connection again. And everything's becoming hybridized. I mean, I was listening to someone from the CSIRO recently looking at global megatrends, and we're seeing a shift back to 50-50 workplace, both in the office and also working from home, and sort of everything seems to be leveling out. Is that something that looks like the future of tech, in your opinion, that there needs to be that connectivity element to the tech platforms?
Absolutely. I mean, I'll freely admit I'm a Melbourneite, so I just like to pretend COVID didn't happen after that enormous lockdown.
You're severely traumatised.
I was very PTSD. But yeah, look, I think absolutely, you know, even for us, we run hybrid in terms of our working model. We've got about 350 people at Mabel and you know, people have a mix of in the office and at home. And I think certainly that in-person connection and collaboration time is super important. So once again, tech is the enabler and gives people inherent access to flexibility that they maybe wouldn't otherwise have, but it's not an end within itself.
No, it's never going to achieve the, you know, the butcher paper.
No. And nor should it really. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all still, you know, people like to be with other people.
Yeah, exactly. We're still people.
Yeah.
We're still humans.
Yeah.
So speaking a little bit about that use of tech as an advocate, we talked a little bit about how it works at a grassroots level, but how does Mabel aggregate its data to ensure that it's safe and that there's no confidentially being breached, particularly because you're in the care sector as well? How do you aggregate that data and then make it accessible and available working with others about in areas of policy, for example?
Yeah, so it's a really interesting question because obviously Mabel operates in a sector that's highly regulated. So if you think about, you know, the clients that come to use the Mabel platform, they're either the recipients of an NDIS package or an aged care package, always looking for care within their home. And then support providers, for a support provider on Mabel, there's like an 18-step verification process. So as part of that, we obviously do collate quite a lot of information because really what we're trying to do is create an environment where the small business person and the client can meet and connect in a safeguarded way.
And is that really important for tech companies to keep remembering that there has to be?
100%, absolutely. And so I think it's that balance between only collecting the information that you really need to collect. And then also once you collect that information, making sure it's stored in a way that is really, like, obviously there's been lots of media and lots of incidences where people have had their data breached. And so making sure that it's stored in a way where it really minimizes the chances of that. And so for a company like us, it is always it is challenging and something we have to be very conscious of, that we do hold a lot of information about people that is quite sensitive, and we need to hold it in a way that has maximum protection and security.
We're going to take a quick break here on Small Biz Matters. And when we return, I want to talk about this idea that big tech is an advocate for the small business community as a whole and are looking at ways that this may, as you know, unintended consequence of becoming, growing and being bigger, and then how you use that data for the power of good. We'll be back after this.
This episode of Small Biz Matters is proudly sponsored by the Australian Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman's Office. ASBIFIO assists, advocates and provides information to Australia's 2.5 million small and family businesses when and where they need it. ASBIFIO delivers practical and actionable advice and research to governments on how to improve policies and legislation. Since its inception, ASBIFIO has responded to over 40,000 requests for assistance from Australian small and family businesses and provides access to dispute resolution services, including assistance with disputes that fall under the franchising, dairy, horticulture and oil codes. ASBIFIO also connects small and family business with mental health support should the need arise. As an independent advocate for small business owners, ASBIFIO is committed to ensuring that Australia is the best place to start, grow or transform a business now and well into the future. See how ASBIFIO can support you at asbfeo.gov.au.
Welcome back to the studios of Triple H. If you've just joined us, we are joined by Emma Clark, who's the Chief Financial and Operations Officer for Mabel, a tech platform that assists people starting their own small businesses and beyond in the care sector. Now, just before the break, Emma and I were talking a little bit about big tech and how they connect with local communities, how they use some of that data to be able to inform local governments or local organisations about where the need may be. And I want to expand on that conversation around advocacy and big tech and data, because I know that one of the issues that government is always saying in policy discussions is we need more information about small business, and it's very hard to talk to 2.2 million of them. And so this is where there's an opportunity for tech to really support the government in their decisions with real, actual, verifiable data. What sort of data does Mabel produce, or a platform like Mabel that is able to support the government in their decisions?
So I think to our earlier conversation, understanding that Mabel operates across the entirety of the country and really being able to provide information to the government about how important the care and support economy is, how important it is to get more people into that. I mean, the government themselves are forecasting enormous shortages in the number of carers in our economy currently and moving forward. And so really being able to share with the government how many independent support providers are using our platform, how much they like the flexibility of being able to run their own business and basically select their own clients and work on hours and terms and conditions that really work for them. And so, to your point, we aggregate 17,000 people's experience, and we can basically at an aggregated level share with, the government and share with regulators, this is what we're actually seeing, this is how we're seeing that independent contractors like to use our platform.
So certain governments, and I will call out the Labor government for this, is very concerned about the way in which these contractors are operating, that it's not safe, or that they are not, that they're being taken advantage of. But you're reflecting something back in that data that shows that they appreciate the flexibility, they want the flexibility, they want to be able to work this job around other work or their lives or the care that they might be giving to someone else and their families. This is a really important part for women in the workforce, is it not?
100%. I think, in terms of the governments of the day swap and change, obviously, over time. And so, our job is to work with everybody and to really just keep on shining a light on the experiences that people are practically having and why it's a good thing to allow different choices of options. Like, if I want to be a full-time worker, I should have the right to be a full-time worker and get remunerated well. Same with casual, same with independent support contractor. And so our view is we should allow all options. And so we're always just sharing data that sort of helps with those kind of conversations. I think in terms of, once again, if we were to go back to the rural and regional aspects, the concept that there are lots of full-time job for carers in those smaller, jurisdictions just doesn't exist. And so being able to unlock people, to your point, who just want to do, 4 or 5 hours a week, supporting people in their community is super important, and certainly much easier to do through a small business than it is as an employee.
And you mentioned as well that 4 to 5 hours. And when you said that, I immediately thought of retirees who are still able and wanting to be able to contribute and be remunerated for that, but don't necessarily, and want to be careful, balance and out their pension versus their super versus their income, but want to be able to give that back and be a valuable contributing member of society. Similar with refugees, there's an opportunity here for them to have in-language support for other people in their community that they want to be able to support. And this is something that has a relatively easy inroad into as a starting place for a business. So you're meeting a lot of needs there, not only from the community's point of view, but actually from that small business owner as well. And it's really filling both sides of the equation. You're filling the need in communities, but you're filling the need for what that small business owner wants to do as well.
Well, and, we talked earlier about, I gave the example of clients wanting to see change, tree change, but a lot of people who end up running their own small business have also see change, tree change. They might be, on to your point, on their transition to retirement, or they might have moved out into a community where they just want that better balance or family time, but they still want to be able to actually provide value within their community. So yes, it does meet the needs of both sort of groups of people who use the platform.
Do you think the concerns around work-life balance are founded from the data that you've seen? Do you think it's fair to say that people are being taken advantage of, or do you think it's, from what you're seeing, more likely that they are embracing this flexibility?
I think people actually embrace flexibility. I think you know, Australia is a very vibrant country with many, many options for how one might want to work. And so the people who choose to come and work on a platform and have that flexibility and do so as an independent support contractor, they're choosing that. Like, no one is forcing them into that particular situation. So I think the people who choose it value it. I mean, what I would say is our observation would be that across the platform, the average amount of hours that a person works through Mabel is about 8 hours a week. So this is not their full-time job in most cases. Now, obviously, there will be some whom it absolutely is, but to the examples that you and I are discussing, it's people either wanting to give back but only, you know, only having the ability to do a certain amount of hours a week, or supplementing another job that they might be doing, or doing it between school drop-offs and things like that. So the flexibility that being a small business in this environment actually creates is fantastic.
And question without notice, and we can get back to people on socials if you like. What proportion of your workforce or your small businesses are women?
A very large proportion. I'd have to get back to you with the percentage, but we basically look at the 17,000 that are providing supports through the platform, and there would be more women than men. I think the care economy attracts, women as
and
well.
And so does the flexibility.
And so does the flexibility. So it's sort of like a bit of a win-win.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously, putting this data together, making possibly some reports, making the graphs look pretty, aggregating it, looking at the governance, making sure it's protected and safe, communicating with government, having that engagement and that relationship, that all takes time. Mm. How do you as an organisation balance that need to invest in what you see as a really critical part of the community and the way forward for the community and what you're providing versus pushing more people and time and resources into just making it more profitable? Why is it such an important part of what Mabel does and you're happy to allocate resources to that?
Yeah, look, it's an interesting question. The reality is that, you know, we operate in a highly regulated sector. As we know, governments are spending a lot of money on NDIS and aged care packages. They want to make sure that that's being spent to good purpose and for great outcomes for clients. And so Mabel, with its access to like being a digital platform, can really provide a lot of information that supports that requirement. We don't really have the choice to go, oh, you just ignore this part of it. You don't talk to government, you don't talk to regulators, because that would just be like sticking one's head in the sand and hoping for the best, which is, you know, for all those small business owners out there, not a great strategy. It's as critical a part for us as running the operations of the business. You made an interesting point in your statement around, well, do you invest in advocacy and talking to external stakeholders versus making more profit? Interesting thing for platforms, and I'm pretty sure any person who was in a platform having this conversation with you would probably say the same thing. You run at a loss for a very long time, so Mabel hasn't actually generated a profit. So for us, it's not really between make more profit versus do advocacy and, you know, make sure we get client outcomes. It's really about making sure that we continue to run a sustainable and viable business that's going to continue to meet the needs of clients. And so tech platforms aren't cheap to to develop and maintain.
Yeah, I can imagine. And so is that something that you would suggest is a good idea for tech platforms to consider as part of their long-term strategy, that you need to be engaging with government and seeking ways in which you can represent those who are on your platform for the power of good?
100%. I think any small business owner needs to look at their business, and it's true of tech platforms as they scale, and say, who are all the stakeholders that we need to keep engaging with, both to ensure that our business continues to thrive and grow, and that also there are facts and data in those conversations as opposed to just opinion and hyperbole. So for us, obviously we've got a range of external stakeholders and a range of internal stakeholders, and I think it's really important to engage with all of them.
I'm curious about those stakeholders, because you mentioned, we've talked about the necessity to be engaged with community, particularly in the role that you've got, and with government. Who are the other organisations that you speak with that might not necessarily be part of your employment or people who work for you, but are you considered to be external stakeholders that you work with?
Yeah, so like a lot of small businesses, we are members of some of the peak bodies, and we obviously are involved in things like the Tech Council of Australia. So once again, all businesses, irrespective of size, you always look for who are the people that you can have a conversation with who are actually going to be subject to some of the same challenges and opportunities that you are, and like it's the power of that collective conversation. If nothing else, it makes you feel good when you can share challenges with other people who have the same challenges. But also quite often someone can sit there and go, hey, actually I had that same issue and this is how we as an organisation dealt with it. And you can learn from each other. And then also on important issues like the role of independent contractors in the economy, you can then have a combined voice to other stakeholders that reflect what's actually happening on the ground.
That's certainly something we encourage people to do here on Small Biz Matters is even if you can't necessarily afford to be part of a professional association, you can't afford the membership fees, you can definitely engage. You can read newsletters.
Read, yeah.
You can go to their free events that they might have. You can pay a lesser rate and watch the conference online. So there's ways that you can connect with them. And like you said, it's about those shared experiences. Mm. And it's interesting to hear that a successful tech company like Mabel is one of those people who still needs to, sit around and share a beer with some of the other tech companies and go, woe is me, this part's hard and this part's easy. It's same as a small business. It's interesting that it doesn't matter how big you grow, that need to become, to belong somewhere and to be listened to and heard by other people experiencing the same things as you is constant.
Yeah, I don't think you ever outgrow that need, not that I've observed.
So one of the things that you're doing with government is you're speaking about that importance about contractors. Mm. And the need for them to remain in the economy. How important do you think that is just for stability in the economy more broadly?
I think it's absolutely critical. I think, we've got an ageing population and so there are going to be more and more people, to our earlier conversation, wanting to transition to retirement. We're still going to, as a growing population, want to be encouraging people to have families. Now, both of these life circumstances inherently require some flexibility in how people can work and engage. And so, supporting people to start up their own businesses and really be able to participate in the economy is just going to become more and more and more critical.
Yeah, plus the fact that we've got this inherent flexibility which was accelerated by COVID and that experience. So everyone has this expectation that they can, in a way, dictate what they haven't been able to do previously, which is like, well, actually, I would like to work from home one day a week because that gives me the flexibility with my family and with my other needs as a human being. So are we treating people a little bit more like humans? And in that instance, is the government doing something that's sort of forcibly pushing us back from that?
I don't think there's any intention to push us back from that. Like, I don't think there's any ill intent in any of the dialogue that's happening at the moment. I think that if I look at the sector that Mabel operates in, if I'm coming to provide support for you, you don't want me to come to your house and be angry and uncomfortable and feel like I'm being ripped off and not really want to be there.
Or stressed.
Mm. You don't, like, that is not going to get a great outcome. Like, that's just a bad outcome for both parties. And so it's in Mabel's best interest and actually the community's best interest that the person, the support provider coming in to provide those supports, is feeling positive and engaged, feeling like they're being remunerated appropriately for the work that they're doing. And so the way in which we work, where people get to set their own rates directly with the client, enables them to actually fulfill those needs. And so then when they're coming and they're doing the support session, they're not forced into it, if that makes sense. And I think allowing those options to continue as an economy is super important.
And so keeping those options, I guess what you're saying is one of the important parts of this is educating contractors and their clients to understand that flexibility remains and the remuneration needs to be. And this goes back to what you're saying about being part of an association. How do you learn what's an appropriate amount to charge? You do that by talking to your peers.
Yes.
And if we collectively come together and look at that as contractors as a whole, it just means that the whole, industry is elevated and the entire small business sector is elevated because everyone's being paid appropriately and it seems to come to a bit of an equilibrium. But when people remain closed and don't have that access and don't have that education and information, then that's when they may be able to be taken advantage of.
Yeah, and one of the things that we don't do as a platform is we don't set rates. That was a specific decision. That's different than some other platforms. There's various reasons that one might go down one path or the other. But for Mabel, we don't set rates. We let the independent contractor set the rates directly with the client. That being said, and to your point about being transparent and being able to help the community work out what those rates could or could not be, we do publish every 3 months what the average rates across the platform for different types of work have been. So we don't say set your rates there because obviously it depends on the exact services that you're providing, depends on how skilled and qualified you are in those services, depends on how many years' experience you've had in providing those services, all those factors around it. But we do try and give some indication as to what the averages are just to help people, particularly people who haven't run their own business before, because it can be really daunting to set a rate, right? To give them a bit of extra information that they can go, well, at least I know the average is $47 an hour.
And that's a really great way that you are, a way in which you are advocating for people working in that sector. Mm. You're giving them the information. And every professional association does that.
Yes.
Everyone has presents publicly what the average rate is. I remember with the Institute of Certified Bookkeepers that I used to be a member of, that is very much something that they publish each year. So people can peg themselves and say, well, this is what my skill level is and this is what I can and can't do. Mm. It's a really interesting way of using data for the power of good. Well, I wanted to say thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a really fascinating discussion. I'd love to see all tech companies behave this way, make some of that data that they produce publicly available so that government can use it and understand that that's, you know, the reality. Tell us a little bit about how people can find out more about Mabel.
So really easy to find us, mabel.com.au. If you're a support provider, hey, if you're in Mackay, I'd love to hear from you. But like anywhere
specifically
else, specifically talking about data. But actually, no, across all of Australia. You can sign up as a support provider. And of course, if you're a client and you have an NDIS package or an aged care package and you want to come to Mabel and be able to choose the person that comes into your home and provides support, mabel.com.au.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us today, Emma. Now, next week, we've got a really interesting program, someone I've been looking forward to having on the program for a long time now. Sandy Chong is the CEO of the Australian Hairdressing Council. She has decades of experience not only fighting for and advocating for her members, those being small businesses in the hairdressing industry and large businesses, but also working with policy and government to improve, particularly around the areas of small business issues, tax, super, migration, skilled migration. She is an absolute gun and expert in so many different facets of small business policy. So I'm looking forward to having a discussion with this passionate industry leader and finding out what really drives her to advocate and dedicate so much of her time and her professional life to supporting the small businesses in her industry. So join us next week on Triple H 100.1 FM. And of course, if you missed any of today's program, you can catch up via Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts, where we have over 225 podcasts available for you to download, all about running a business, but importantly about people, policy and purpose. We will be back next week with another Small Biz Matters. Thanks for joining me.